This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting,
lightsaber clashing,
the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping,
banshee flying,
space mountain launching,
galaxy rewinding,
what is the whole network galaxy rewinding,
fireworks igniting,
world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. Back for our first episode during the month of July. Guys, the month of July, this is my reminder to you that if you want to do a poor man's food plot, you still have plenty of time. I've been getting a lot of text messages, calls, Instagram messages, things like that, about people asking me about starting up a food plot, and you can do it. Every year on the 4th of July, when I go to the cabin, that is when I take the first step in my poor man food plot. And it's as simple as taking a backpack sprayer, filling it with glyphosate, using the recommended rates that the label has for a 4-gallon backpack sprayer, and spraying the entire area that I'm going to plant with the food plot and terminating everything that's there. And if you do that and allow it to be burned down and ready to go, you'd be amazed at how good of a food plot you can plant by doing nothing more than broadcasting into that standing dead thatch material and then going over top of it with either a lawnmower and just mulching that thatch over top of the seed, or just going in with a four-wheeler and a cul-de-packer, or maybe a chain drag, or even a harrow in some cases, you know, a drag harrow, things like that. You'd be amazed at how good of a food plot you could do with minimal tools and minimal equipment. I've even done it where you just broadcasted the seed right before a rain and did nothing to it other than spray it and spread it and forget it. But this is your reminder. Usually the beginning of July, that's when I'm like, hey, this is my last-ditch effort to do that. So holiday weekend coming up, going away, going to go do something food plot related, get your food plots prepped and ready to go. So this is your warning here. We're going to dive into this week's episode. I had a quick thought I wanted to share with you guys. I was listening to a podcast, and I'll plug the podcast just because there's no reason not to. It's been a fun one to listen to. I've been listening to the Unashamed podcast with the Robertson family. And, you know, for those of you who've been familiar with Annie's Duck Dynasty and Duck Commander, you know, Jace Robertson, Al Robertson, you know, formerly Phil Robertson. He was just recently passed here this year. But I've always enjoyed listening to those guys. They're just down-to-earth guys. And one of the things they said on the one episode that I listened today, they made a statement about, and they were referencing referencing spiritual matters, but they said it's not about the mansion that you build, it's about who's in it. And they were referring to the kingdom of God. And the other statement they said was, the house doesn't make you happy, the people in the house are what make you happy. And when I heard that, I had a huge aha moment, because I realized that's why I've gone down this rabbit hole of chasing people and experiences with people in the world of hunting and that camp atmosphere, because I've come to the conclusion that it is not about the size of the animal or the species or how the hunt goes down, the prep work. It's been about the stories with the people along the way. And that's not me being cliche. That's speaking from the heart, because I've been a very fortunate, blessed hunter. I've got a wall full of, you know, skins of bears and all kinds of turkeys, and I've got multiple racks that are now stacking up in a corner that I haven't found a home for yet. I've been blessed to take a lot of game in my life, and each and every one of them keeps me driving for the next one and chasing the next one, and I'm never filled by those. And I just thought that statement was so profound. It's not the house that makes you happy. It's not the season. When you translate that, when I think about that, I think about the upcoming hunting season, the planning and all the prep work that we do, what we fantasize in our minds and play out how it's going to go down, you know, setting up a tree stand and, you know, your dream buck is going to come in this direction and he's going to come in at 20 yards and you're going to stick him with an arrow and it's going to be absolutely perfect. All of that, you know, that's like building the house. It's like building this setting that we have dreamed up about in this passion of hunting. And at the end of the day, that is never going to fulfill us and make us happy. But I tell you what, the people that we shared with, you know, when you go to do that story, or if there's people that helped you along the way, maybe set that tree stand up, or maybe you're doing a drive at camp and it's the whole group when it came together, or maybe it's somebody that you bring along in the recovery, or maybe you're taking your children with and you shoot a great deer, but you got to share it with your child, or, you know, maybe you share it with your dad or something along those lines. That has been so much bigger for me than anything else. I have realized that. And when I just heard that analogy that they said, it made me really think about how I want to frame my hunting season this year. And guys, I encourage you to think about what's really important this year as you go in. You know, we have these desires and these passions, and we're fueled by it. Man, there's not a day that doesn't go by I don't think about this. I'm going nuts texting my friends, getting ready for bear season this fall. I can't wait to start scouting. I'm thinking about setting trail cameras and doing scouting for deer, food plots. Everything is on my mind. I love it. But at the end of the day, slow down and think about what is most important, because I can tell you right now, I am still not going to be in a position where that's all going to take priority over my loved ones. And a lot of the time that sounds so simple, and I think, yeah, of course I'm not going to put, you know, my family, you know, on the back burner compared to what I want to do in the fall until we get there. And it's so easy to miss the mark there. And I think in order for us not to have that happen, we got to plan for it and prepare now and focus on how we're going to manage that. So I'm rambling, but I just thought that was so important and I wanted to share it with you guys. And part of the reason I wanted to share that with you is because it really, really tailors into this week's episode. So I've shared with you guys on the podcast a number of times the amount of experiences that I've had that just tell me this is something that God wants me to be doing. It's having this podcast and connecting with hunters and sharing hunting experiences through the light that He provides. And there's no other way to describe an intervention or a push from God than this guest this week, because this week's guest is coming to you from Oklahoma, and I got to be connected with Dakota Gray through a former podcast host on the network. He put the two of us together, and Dakota reached out and said, man, I got a story, and I just feel like I got to share it to somebody. And what better show here? So we're going to talk about Dakota's upbringing and how passionate of a hunter he has been his whole entire life, but how that has taken a huge turn through a series of unforecasted events where he had a terrible accident that caused him to become paraplegic. And we're going to talk about how that happened and the journey of recovery, the mental state, and how he got through it. And guess what? Now we're going to talk about the backside of it, all the awesome hunting experiences. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a spoiler alert. One of the reasons that I tied that thing into the beginning of our intro with this episode is because after you listen to this episode and you get to the end, you're going to hear Dakota say something that you've heard many people say, but I don't think you can ever remind us enough. It's that the thing he values the most is hunting with his daughter. And you could put all the big game animals in front of him in the world, and that experience with his daughter means more than anything. I think this is a great story. I'm thankful that he was able to share it with us. And it's a great reminder to not be a knucklehead, not go too fast-paced, to make sure you got all your safety equipment and gear lined up, like, because in the blink of an eye, your life can change. And simple things like wearing your hunter safety system, wearing your seatbelt, anything like that, little steps can make big differences in your life. So we're going to roll into this episode with Dakota. Real quick shout out before we do to our partners, Radix Hunting. If you're in the market for any of the gear that Radix Hunting has to offer, from ground blinds, tree stands, trail cameras, trail camera accessories, game feeders, check out radixhunting.com. Also, check out Little Mountain Outfitters, littlemountainoutfitters.com. Use the code Woodsman10 on your next purchase to get 10% off your next purchase. Little Mountain Outfitters is a shop in Richland, Pennsylvania, an archery shop that you're supporting a small local business, but you can do it from anywhere within the country. Get high quality hunting gear, archery gear, saddle hunting gear. Check out everything they have to offer, littlemountainoutfitters.com. And again, use the code Woodsman10 to get 10% off your next purchase. All right, here we go with Dakota.
Attention archers, would you like to be part of the world's oldest gathering of bow hunters? Then mark your calendars for the annual Pennsylvania Bow Hunters Festival. This annual three-day event is held at the Sullivan County Fairgrounds in Forksville, Pennsylvania, which has been going on since 1957. It's a family-friendly event allowing participants to engage in 10 different archery shooting areas, including 3D, moving small game targets, a timed clay pigeon shoot, a steel boar, and the renowned Forksville running deer target. There's also a ton of food, fellowship, and entertainment to be made. The 2025 festival is scheduled for September 19th to the 21st, with daily hours running 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. This event is organized by a nonprofit committee, and all proceeds support local needs, including youth groups, volunteer fire and ambulance companies, and more. Visit their website at www.pabowhunters.com for more information, and we hope to see you there this year.
All right, joining me on this week's episode, I got somebody that's calling in from a little bit of a distance from where we're normally used to having some of our listeners, but we got a good story for you this week, and I'm anxious to share it. This week, I got Dakota Gray on the phone with me, and it's a pleasure to be talking with you, Dakota. Thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
So one of the fun parts, and I've said this before, like one of the coolest parts of what I've got to do with having this show and being on this podcast network is literally networking within people who have shows. And you had reached out to John Hudspeth. John Hudspeth, for a very long time, was the host of the Oklahoma Outdoors podcast on the network. And life has gotten crazy for John, and things have changed, and he's no longer hosting the show, though we still post stuff on social media and things like that. But I got to be good friends with John. I was able to go pig hunting at his ranch here this spring and got to relay. But John reached out to me that, Dakota, you reached out to him with something that you wanted to share, and that's how we got to meet. So if you wouldn't mind, just introduce yourself and tell folks a little bit about where you're from and who you are and stuff like that.
Yeah. My name's Dakota Gray. I'm from Ada, Oklahoma, born and raised. I've hunted and fished my whole life. I grew up doing it all. I'm 30, almost 33 now, and still get out and do it. I'm actually in a wheelchair due to this story that we will go over. And I just wanted to reach out and maybe help a few people and get them to a safe place, get them back home, or get them to Christ one way or the other.
Well, I like that. So you keep alluding to something that happened to you. You talked about being in a wheelchair. So walk me through a little bit. I mean, tell me a little bit about growing up and what was your introduction into hunting, and what kind of hunting are you really into when you think about your surrounding area, things you've been able to do in your lifetime in the world of the outdoors?
Yes, around here, deer hunting is a really big thing. My uncle Chris actually got me into hunting a long time ago. He's always done it his whole life, and he introduced me to it when I was a little kid. He used to take me all the time, and that really got me started into it. And then I've been going nonstop ever since here. I haven't missed a year, even the year I had my accident. I started then, and I came back even stronger after that. So
shooting deer and stuff. Tell me about one of your first vivid memories when it comes to the deer woods, and how has that impacted you to this day?
Let's see. The first deer that I ever killed was a doe. I remember my dad dropped me off at my deer stand, and he drove on into work. And I shot a doe, and I called him, and I was like, "Hey, Dad, I killed a deer," and my heart was just racing. I was so excited, and that was the first time being hooked on it. And Dad had to turn around on his way from work and c- come back and help me find the deer and stuff. And that was just the, I found a connection in the outdoors, and I just found a closer relationship with God, seeing his creation and the world wake up. And I just found a lot of peace in it. And it got me hooked from the day I started onto it.
And how old were you at that point? Do you remember how old you were when you started going on your own?
When I killed my first deer, I was about 12. When I started going, I went at the age of about 8. I started going. So I didn't kill a deer till later in life, but I would just always go and sit with my uncle or sit out in the woods just in general and just kind of learn and gather information.
Right. So tell me a little bit about, so you're hunting at a young age and you're 33 years old now. So a lot has happened from now till then. And yes. you've been talking about this accident. So walk me through some of the hunting experiences you had leading up to this accident and talk about what happened to you.
Okay. Yeah. I've had a couple of close calls. I think everybody as hunters had some close calls. I've fallen out of a deer stand a couple of times before that. Nothing major. Take your breath away. All it takes is just that one time no, and that's what caught up to me. I think a lot of us get comfortable in the stand and doing what we love, and we don't really think about the consequences of what we do. And that was one thing I've learned, and I hope I can help someone today with that. It was just it was a very big eye opener, and I caught it too late.
Sure. So you're talking about falling out of a tree stand. So I mean, yes. I remember when I was a kid and I was in woodshop class. You know, everybody had to take woodshop class. Didn't matter, boy, girl, what your interest was, if it was a requirement to graduate, right? And right. I remember there were some girls that were really uncomfortable with equipment. And they were afraid of the lathes and, you know, running a planer and just, you know, afraid that they were going to do something wrong and hurt themselves. And I'll never forget that our woodshop teacher said to the class, said, "Girls, I have never once in my life had an issue with anybody that is coming from the position you are of nervousness and carefulness. Like, I've never had an accident." And in fact, if you look at the statistics, the accident rate for somebody like yourself, a beginner who's learning and trying to handle this and is nervous, their statistic of getting hurt is so low. He said, "Where I have to be concerned are the kids that have extra confidence, have too much confidence, and that confidence in what they're doing makes them get a little bit complacent, and that's where accidents yes. happen, where they're not wearing personal protective equipment and things like that." So is that kind of resonating when you relate that into the hunting world of what happened with you?
That's exactly where I was going with this. Yes. October 5th, 2013, was just another year. We was comfortable. We was hunting. We didn't think anything about it. You know, even in 2013, some deer stands that you'd buy would come with safety harnesses and stuff like that. And I've just always been one. I'd throw them to the side or throw them away. Just never use them. And like you said, it's just a comfort thing. We get so comfortable doing something that we're used to, and we forget about the actions that we're doing and the consequences that can come behind those. And I think it's something that could very well be avoided nowadays with all the hunter safety systems that are out there. I just, every year you hear about it, somebody falling out of a deer stand, and it just kills me, because they either die or they end up like me, or you know, something really bad. And I just feel so preventable from happening nowadays.
So what went wrong that day? You know, you've done everything a certain way. You know, 2013, if you're 33 years old, that means you were probably right around 19, 20 years old, I'm guessing, at that time. And you'd done it a certain way. You had a system where you were going to the, you know, you're doing your deer stand preparations every year, preparing for the hunt every single year. And one day something was different. Something happened and something changed. Was it something within equipment? Was it something within how you approached that day? But walk me through what happened in leading up to the season and what made that day different.
Yes, so it was a little bit of both. There was some different equipment being used. It was a different day. It was the wrong day to use that kind of equipment. There's a lot of stuff that could have prevented that. So those little small stands that you can get from Walmart that just ratchet strap onto a tree for,
sure.
At the time they were like $50, and then you had to get the climbing sticks, mm-hmm. and strap them on and climb up. Well, it had been raining all day anyway, and I October 4th I'd actually hung that stand. Because October 1st, I hunted in a ladder stand, and I didn't know it at the time. And I realized I was on a beaten down trail, and I had some does come in on that trail, and I spooked them. They ran off. So I made a new game plan. And October 4th, I came back that night, and I hung the stand that I ended up falling out of. And we went hunt October 5th that morning. We hunted all day, and I it was really high up. I think I was about 20 feet up, mm-hmm. and the weather was just, it'd been raining all day, and you know, stands are metal and things are slippery as is, and it was a little bit of everything that went into that, new equipment, not being used to it and stuff like that. October 5th though, 2013, that evening, me and my buddy David Collins, we went hunting down at Connerville, and because we have family land down there, and I always took somebody with me because we always had like hogs and stuff like that, and I thought just for safety that, you know, we have, you take somebody with you in case something bad happens, mm-hmm. and it paid off that night that, you know, brought somebody with us, and so that night we just
Did that happen just, when you were going into the hunt or on your way out?
It was on my way out. So it was an evening hunt. It was getting pitch black outside, which is funny. So Connerville is actually a very small town. It has a volunteer fire station and a post office box, and that's all it has. And so there's no really cell phone reception down there. And what's funny is that night is just one of very few times that God had started in on me that night. And the first thing that he did is we had cell service all night, all day. And we both had two different carriers, phone carriers, and we both had service. Text was just going through. And we was texting each other back and forth. And I had drove his pickup to my spot, which is from he was hunting on the north side of our place, and I was on the south end, and I drove his pickup about 400 or 500 yards straight from his where he was hunting at, and we was texting back and forth, and he didn't get a text from me there at the end, and he texted me and asked if I was ready to go, and I never responded, so he got out of his deer stand and he ran down over to where I was at. And he had actually found me, and I had already fallen by that point out of the stand. And but as far as what I know, the last thing that I remember doing was, you know, those stands have the seat. You can pick the seat up.
Yes.
And it, like, push it out of the way. And that's what I did. That's the last thing I remember is I turned around, I picked the seat up, and I was stepping off of the ladder.
That transition to the ladder.
Right. And it, like I said, it's been raining all day. You got metal equipment. I might have slipped. That's probably a good possibility. What happened? Still, nobody knows to this day. But
so, when you guys checked out that tree stand, was everything about it normal and intact after that accident?
Yeah. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. I had a buddy go get it down for me after, and there was no cables broke, no screws out of it, no nothing. Everything was as is your setting in it.
Mm. So walk me through that next 24 hours of what happened.
Yeah. So the next 24 hours was very, crucial in all this, and God keeps coming through this night. It's just amazing. It wasn't just one miracle. It was miracle after miracle with him. And so after my buddy had found me, he was actually a prison guard. And so he knew not to touch me, not to try to help me up or anything. So he called 911, and they sent an ambulance at first. Well, the fields, it's a hay field, so it's wet, muddy, and ambulance can't get in there. So there's actually a volunteer fireman that lived up the road, and he'd heard it on the scanner. Well, he knew where I was at, and he drove his side-by-side down there. And a few volunteers and EMT workers had actually drove up to where I was at, and they put me on a stretcher. And they had taken me and put me on a stretcher, and they caught in a helicopter. Well, what's funny about this story is that a helicopter cannot land in tall grass. It's one of those things they can't do. And if they land in wet grass, they have to be very cautious of their surroundings and take off. And I guess helicopters have a lot of special equipment on it that you have to be careful with. And this helicopter pilot landed in grass that was over 6 foot. And the only reason I knew that was because October 1st, I walked from one end of the timber line into another, which is right in the middle where that helicopter landed. And I'm 6'2", and the grass was every bit, there was pieces that was tall as I am. And that helicopter pilot, he flew over and he said, who mowed a circle out in the middle? And nobody mowed a circle in the middle of that pasture. I walked it a few days before that, and my stand was 20 foot above the ground. I could see in that field, and I can assure you there was no circle cut out of that field. And that pilot landed right in the middle of that. They said it was just the most perfect circle that was cut out, and he landed there. And
and to this day, do you know why the grass was shorter?
Nobody does.
Wow.
Yeah, there was probably, by the time they put me on the helicopter, there was probably 8 different people there, and not anyone could explain why that grass was cut like that.
Wow.
And so after that, then they were supposed to metaflop me to Dallas. Well, the weather was really bad that day, and it was raining and wind and stuff, so they ended up metaflopping me to OU Medical. And OU actually worked out for the better, because Dallas is a little bit further than Oklahoma City from us. So as soon as we landed on the roof of OU, I'd actually coded, and they was able to get me off the helicopter and work on me and bring me back to life after that. And if I'd flown to Dallas, who knows what would have happened. So I think that was just another God move. And so they got me into the critical care room, and they worked on me forever. The chaplain had to meet my family at the door and stuff, and that's never a good thing when you have to meet a chaplain. But we
So I was kind of curious, if you don't mind, because I know this is a heavy story. I was kind of curious, at this point, like, what actually happened to your body from this fall? What transpired, and what, you know, they had to work on you? What happened to you?
So I ended up with a T3 spinal cord injury, which is pretty high up. It's your upper chest, and that's where a splinter of a bone had actually broke from my vertebrae and went into my spinal cord, but it actually crushed my T2, the vertebrae that's above it, and it completely crushed it, but I didn't get an injury from there. And I landed, when I fell out of the stand, I landed on my left side, my shoulder, and I crushed my shoulder, my collarbone. I broke my jaw, punctured my lung, severely injured my kidney, this all stuff that you know that
All right, everyone, it's that time of year where things are greening up and I'm starting to think about food plots. And if you're doing the same thing, look no farther than Vitalize Seed, specifically Nitro Boost Spring and Summer Planting. It's the food plot that has the ability to fix atmospheric nitrogen and add diversity to your food plot mix. It's highly browse tolerant and adds a ton of benefit, not just to the wildlife, but for your soil. 30% more diversity than any other food plot you're going to find, and it's engineered for the proper carbon to nitrogen ratio to naturally feed your soil biology and set you up for a fall food plot like no other. Diversity is king for your wildlife and for your soil. Look no farther and check out Vitalize Seed.
Listen, landowners, let Stephen Chilcote, land and timber consultant, turn your land into a deer and wildlife magnet. With over 25 years of land and timber management experience, Steve's approach optimizes food and cover to attract deer and increase hunting success for his clients. Visit us online at chilcoteforester.com or call Steve today at 814-360-4510 to make sure your land is the ultimate hunting paradise.
You still have to go and get checked out every year and stuff like that. And I broke some ribs and stuff like that. It was a lot of internal damage.
And that damage that occurred, you know, I'm assuming based on what you've told me with this story so far and everything else that you were pretty unconscious for the majority of this everything that's happened. So when did you actually come to your senses and come back to realize like what actually happened?
Right. So October 5th is when it happened, and I remember Thanksgiving is when I like started remembering and thinking about stuff, and then I remember my mom being by my side, and she would repeatedly tell me over and over again, "Bub, you fell off a deer stand. You're in the hospital," and stuff like that. Because when you're asleep that long, you're confused. You don't know what happened. Even though you have a sense of what's going on, it's very confusing being asleep for that amount of time.
And that amount of damage that you were describing to your body, how would you explain the level of pain and agony that you went through?
The human mind shuts off, can block out a lot of that, believe it or not. And yes, you can take so much pain, and then it just becomes, your body just is immune to it. And I think that happens after a certain extent. Believe it or not, it wasn't all that painful. You have things that they do to you there that is painful. You remember little things, but to be truthful, they made it as comfortable as possible. And it wasn't that bad as far as that. The hospital is good about keeping you comfortable and stuff. So
sure. Well, then that leads me to the next question, which is, I think, a big one, is let's talk about your response, because you go through something like that. It's extremely traumatizing to your body. It's also extremely traumatizing to your mental health, to what is going on and how you respond to that. So you said around Thanksgiving is something that you started to come to things, remember. So that's going into the holidays. You got Thanksgiving, and a month later you got Christmas. It's the time of year where you're with family and everything else. Walk me through that first holiday when that happened.
Yeah, so we all, my whole family, I had a great support system. My whole family was up there every weekend. Every day that they could come up there, they was there. We spent, you know, I had a Christmas tree up there. They had Thanksgiving with me up there. Like, we celebrated. It was a second home to all of us. Everybody spent so much time up there. It just became a natural place for us. And we just made the best of it for what it was. Everybody was very positive and uplifting in that horrible time of life. I'm not saying it was a great time, and there's still a lot. You know, I'm going on 12 years of the accident, and I still struggle with a lot of mental stuff. That's normal. When you're 21, you have an accident that completely takes away your freedom that you do have. It's a mind struggle, and you have to work on it a lot. But I have a daughter who was 6 months old at the time, and I've always said that's my little angel. She's always saved me. She's made me want to keep going and pushing. And she'll be 12 next month. So that's what that's what's really kept me going.
Can you recall what some of the things were that went through your mind during the course of that time when you had to spend in the hospital? I'm not sure how long you were in the hospital until you had to come out or got moved from that immediate room to the next room. But, you know, you went through a process of bodily healing. But during that time, you had thoughts and all kinds of things creep in, right? And walk me through what you recall in your, you know, coming back from this mentally.
Yes, yeah, so I was actually in the hospital for a total of 4 months and a few days, and you have a lot of time just to sit and absorb everything that has happened and just think and reflect on life. It actually didn't hit me until after I got out of the hospital of what actually happened. And it probably affects everybody a little different, but me personally, nothing was really true or surreal until I got home. Okay. And then that's when life kicked in. Mm. And so
So life kicks in and you come home to the realization that, and I guess let's preface it by saying, you know, you talked about the injury and the spinal cord injury. Talk about, like, what is your physical capabilities now after this accident? Like, I know you say you're in a wheelchair. What state of ability do you have in your day-to-day life now?
Right. So I'm a paraplegic now. I'm actually paralyzed from my chest down. So I still have full function of my arm, and I use a manual wheelchair just because I was 21 when the accident happened. I was stubborn. If you have it, you use it or you lose it. And that's always been my mindset. So I'm very hard headed and stubborn, and I know that, and I don't let things stop me. If I want to do it, I'll do the best I can, or I figure out how to do it. It's all a mental thing. And I think the biggest factor is you have to have something to keep pushing you, whether it be something you love, whether it's something you want to do. We all have goals and dreams in life, and we just have to keep pushing for it. And the only negative part about life is your mindset. Mm-hmm. And life is just a big – life is literally what you make it. And I've learned that during this little journey of almost 12 years. You can literally make any situation into what you want it to be.
Sure. So you laid out the foundation of how you know where your state of ability is within your bodily function now. So walk me through coming home from the hospital. What were some of the biggest challenges and biggest hurdles as you went into this new era of your life?
Sure. So it was it's a struggle. It's your arms or your new legs. You have a long ways to go to building upper strength to be able to push yourself to you have to slide every, you know, your legs are not working, so you and most of your body doesn't work, so that's dead weight, so you're having to put all the work into just your arms. So it's a lot to get used to. It's like anything else. You do it enough and you get good at it. But it's a lot of transfers and just a lot of practice. It took me a long time to get used to being able to roll around and do the things that I really want to do and go a long distance and stuff like that. But it's all about just being able to you know, you got to stay healthy too in that situation and keep yourself in good health and work out and stuff like that. But as long as you do that, then you stay in pretty good shape and be able to do all the things that, you know, anything that you, is in reach for you as far as not being able to walk or certain stuff that you can or can't reach.
So you were talking about your daughter, how she's a very big inspiration and a big drive for you. What were some of the things in your life that really stood out to make you want to keep going and driving and keep having that? Like, what were the things that made you want to work to continue to have that positive outlook on whatever life has to offer you?
Right. So definitely Dixie kept me going. That was my daughter. She was a very big help here on earth. But also God plays the biggest role, overall. If it wasn't for God, I promise I wouldn't be here. None of us would be here. If it wasn't for him, and he helps so much with the mindset and having a positive outlook on life. I think we as humans can't do that by ourselves. You have to have God in your life to be able to, I think, to have a successful life or just a life in general to be able to function, because life is hard. It's hard for anybody. It definitely took a toll on me getting in a wheelchair compared to walking, but that's just life in general. So I think God is the main thing that we have to have in life in order to succeed or be anything.
Well, one thing I've learned as you bring up your faith, we're all human. We're all pretty weak, and a lot of us want to think we're pretty tough, but we're all pretty darn weak. And one of the reasons that I feel pretty confident in that statement is, I think it's in the book of Matthew when it tells the story of John the Baptist when John was put in prison and then he ultimately died. You know, there was a point at that time when he was in prison where you read some of the scripture and it sounds as though he was starting to second guess what everything he had done in his life. And he was sitting there thinking, is this really it? Am I really working towards what I believe? Like, God, is this actually true that what I'm preaching is truly the Son of Man is here and I'm going to give my life for this? Is that really that? And doubt creeps in. And I think if somebody is bold, who is a next of kin to Jesus, would have a doubt like that, then I know that any person that's on the face of this earth at some point can have doubts in their life. So,
right.
What doubts did you have, and how did you work through that?
Faith is believing what you can't see. So I'd rather believe there's a God and die and go to heaven than not believe there's a God and end up in hell, is the way I think about it too. We're all humans, like you just said. We're so imperfect. That's why he had to send Jesus for us, because he knew we couldn't do it by ourselves. And everybody has good days and bad days. I'm human. I struggle with that. Some days I wonder why God did it to me, but we live in a fallen world full of imperfect humans, and I don't believe that it was God that did it to me. I get mad just like any other human out there, and sometimes negativity gets the best of me. Not most days, but we all have hard days out there, and you just have to live to see the next day, and it always gets better.
You know, what happened to you is a perfect example of the comments that people say, like, why do bad things happen to good people? You know, you hear it all the time. You know, whether it's illness, ailment, accidents, you know, falling out of a tree stand. And, you know, I'm sure in your life, since this accident has happened, you've had instances where you're like, I just don't understand. You know, people ask you probably, I just don't understand. How could you be happy? How could you believe in a God that has that, like, that's allowed something like this to happen to you? Like that's nothing of that seems good to me. Like, Dakota, how do you reason with that? And what's your response when somebody says something like that to you?
Well, I believe that we serve a loving God, and it says that he loves us greater than we can love our own kids. And the way I think about it is that we wouldn't allow that to happen to our own kids, but we would be there to take care of them when bad does happen. Well, I think God's the same way. I don't think he personally allows bad things to happen. We're imperfect humans. I had a gut instinct all day October 5th to not go hunting. I didn't listen to it. I had an instinct. I knew something bad was around the corner, but I'm a human and I didn't listen to it. And that led me, you know, I made my decision with having that instinct anyway. But I think that bad things is going to happen to people. You're not going to get away from it. We're imperfect humans. But if you trust in God, you believe in him and you give him your faith, he will bring you out better than you was before.
So one of the things I was curious about, you know, we all grow as people, right? We mature over time. You know, for those of people that are listening to this that have a belief in their faith in Christ, they've heard the word sanctification, and that's talking about, you know, God molding and refining you over time as we try to repent and become more like him. And the thing I'm wondering, when you have a bad thing happen like this, in what ways, when you think about whether it's your faith or whether you think it's your day-to-day life, is there any ways in your mind that you have believed that the experience has some way actually made you stronger?
Yes, it has. It's brought me definitely closer to God. It drew me so close to him that there's no denying that God is real in my eyes. All the things that he showed me just the night of the accident, by the helicopter landing where there, you know, was supposed to be tall grass, by going to OKC instead of Dallas, God performed so many miracles just that night alone. So, I don't have personally doubt about him. But I know that he is real, because he spoke to me so much since then, and he just keeps showing up. And when I get negative and down on life, he always shows up at the right time. Sometimes it feels like it's the breaking point, and I'm tired and I give out, but he's never been a day late. So I think that's really keeps a person going and believing too.
You know, one of the things that stands out about this, and I'll kind of share this this little story here. So when you hear about bad things happening to good people, and that gets brought up over time, one of the things that has come to my mind whenever this comes into conversation is if you read in John chapter 9, and John chapter 9 is a story where, you know, there was all kinds of, you know, Pharisees and, you know, higher up people that, you know, were surrounding when Jesus was doing miracles. And there was a blind man that was in the street, and they asked him, you know, why is it that this man is blind? Was it his sins that caused him to be blind, or was it the sins of his parents? And I think the response is incredible. The response was neither. It wasn't sin. It wasn't necessarily something specific. It was that so the miracles of God could be shown through this person. And that's when he spit in the ground, made mud, rubbed it on the man's eyes, and he could see. So
yes,
miracles can't like that still happen to this day. I mean, there's plenty of things stories that get told of people experiencing miracles where they're renewed. Now, you say, well, that in Dakota's instance, that would be, well, why didn't he just miraculously heal, that he gets full body function? And that's not necessarily the miracle that I believe God is always looking for us. I believe the miracle can be you sharing this story and then showing the sovereignty of God and sharing his miracles and sharing his goodness. Because in an earthly sense, you could say it is a miracle that Dakota fell from a tree stand, broke his back, and is a paraplegic, and still has life within him and still has faith within him. And for him to be able to show that and carry his life out in a positive manner, if Dakota can go through that, then I can go through whatever I'm going through too. Because it sounds to me like Dakota's story is a whole lot worse than mine. And I truly believe that Jesus showed a miracle through that healing that blind man, and he's a miracle. He's showing miracles through you, even if your bodily function is never going to be the same for the rest of your life.
Right. I personally believe that too. I think good can come from anything, and I'm nothing special. I'm not a chosen one. I'm just an average Joe that nobody knows about, and he did all this for me, and he would do it for you or anybody else. He doesn't pick favors, and he's a loving God. He'll perform miracles for all of us. Nobody is more special than the next person to him. Mm-hmm. We're all equal in God's eye. And I think the biggest thing is our faith. It says in the Bible that God will meet us where our faith is at. And I think that is the biggest key to success in life with having God in it.
And I brought this up on a podcast not too long ago. I came across somebody's post about, you know, they did this video about why weren't you in church on Sunday? And their response was, I usually go alone. And it shows a video of a turkey out in the field and they're turkey hunting. And, you know, I went into this whole thing and searching and diving in and talking to people and trying to read some scripture and try to find out, like, what is there to it? And I came across a couple interesting things. And, you know, Acts chapter 17, it talks about that, you know, God is not found in the presence of man-made things such as temples. Well, that just solidifies my thought as a hunter. Like, I'm closest to God in creation. There's truth to that. But at the same time, there's plenty of scripture that talks about the need for us to be together, that we're people that are meant to be together, that iron sharpens iron. We should be strengthened and not forsake the gathering of people and of believers, because we're stronger in numbers in that sense. And I think that's a really, really important key. And when I don't know. That's just
I do believe that's why God says that, why he wants there to be a communion of people together, is because we help each other. That's what humans are for. We're put here on earth for each other, to help people in one way or another. And sometimes we don't even realize it, and we help somebody more than we know. And I think that has a lot to do with what God means by strengthening us in church together too, is that we can help each other. We can learn from each other. There's so much out there that we don't know about. And, mm-hmm. and I think God uses different people in different ways to help us see that kind of stuff.
And one of the thoughts that I had too was, you know, we're talking about God, we're talking about church and this and that, and there's still a disconnect for some people that might listen to this. And I'm always going to go back to when people talk about that going turkey hunting or going out in the woods and skipping church and feeling closer to God. I always will come back to and ask the question to people, who is God? And just ponder that question. Who is God? And I've heard a lot of different answers. And you and I have had that conversation now, that we believe that God is Jesus Christ. And you were talking about putting your faith in God. You talked about God meeting you. Faith comes for those who believe, and it's in Romans 10:9. I can't remember exactly how it is, but those who confess the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ and confesses that with their mouth is there's somebody who, you know, will gain eternal life. And it's putting your faith in Jesus. And I think we can easily get misguided that something that God created, creation, going out in the timber and enjoying that. I think that's something that we can easily turn to a negative, in a sense where we use that as a false idol and this false sense for our own benefit, where in reality it's a positive thing and it's something we can glorify him in. But at the end of the day, who is God? I believe Jesus Christ is God. And I think that's one disconnect that we hear a lot when we start talking about our faith.
Right. God is and was and always has been. He's been here from day one. It's unexplainable, but God is no respect for man either. So our minds can't comprehend what he is.
Sure.
He's no respect to man. So the things that he can do for us and the things that he does is greater than our minds can even prosper. So, or can imagine. So in that stance, I think that we can only run off of faith in order to understand that. And it's not even fully understanding it. You just have to, he gives us enough signs that he's real. He gives us miracles every day. And that's all we need. But I think that God is just, he's no respect for man. So I think that you just have to have faith and you have to believe in order. And you can't force somebody to believe that.
Sure.
Right. And I don't think that we should. It didn't say Jesus was, that he came here and he was shaking his hand at everybody, telling them, oh, you must love me and praise me and God. And he didn't come. He came in love. And I think that's the only way that we can get people to him.
100%. You hit the nail on the head. And like when I talked about that, you know, going to church and stuff, that's not me pointing my finger at anybody. Anybody that listens is saying, right, oh, you should be going to church. And that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying you should ask yourself, who's God? And then pursue it from there. Because all I can do is share, and all you can do is share your experience and share who God is. And now you have the decision. And it through it, you need to love through that. And, you know, First Corinthians chapter 13 tells you what love is. And anybody who goes and pointing fingers of how we should live our life, you think about that in the hunting world. In Dakota, if I'm just going to use an example. Let's just say you're a crossbow hunter and I'm a compound hunter. You know, how many times do people want to make the like, oh, you're not good enough, or you're doing it the wrong way, or you should do it this way, or you have this belief that a law should be a certain way about something. Like there's this purist mindset. Me telling you what I think you should do, is that loving and is that well received by you? Not at all. But loving you however you choose to live your life as Christ did, that shows the miracles that you and I were just talking. Those miracles where maybe your body isn't healed, but the miracle that you can still love and be persistent through this horrible thing, that's what magnifies it. And I think anybody, that's what all come down to is the love of Christ.
Right. And that's ultimately what's going to lead us to Christ, or somebody that doesn't know Christ, that's ultimately what's going to lead them to him. Because shaking your hand at them and judging them is not going to get them to want to experience something new like that. So I think that as much as we want to think we're right, we all have opinions, and that don't make it right. So I think that we're just supposed to love and show. That's what it says about being a candle in the world, is being a light in the world, is to love and just share about Jesus and your experience with him. And I think that can get people a lot better and faster than judging them or holding a candle up against, you know, their candle and trying to compare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they say he came in grace and truth, and you know, putting your trust in him provides you the grace for your shortcomings. The truth is something that you pursue, and the truth is something that you're going to pursue, and when you pursue it, you desire to walk closer. And you're never going to get it right. You're never going to get it perfect, but it's that desire to continue and ask for that. So, well, one of the things I wanted to ask you before we wrap this podcast up, I wanted to talk about hunting now in your life and talk about a couple. How are you hunting? How are you getting around? What do you need? What, you know, obviously a lot has changed. Talk about some of those changes. And I want to hear a couple, maybe a hunting story or two, maybe from this season or something.
Yeah. So hunting nowadays is a lot different, but, just cause you have to do something different doesn't mean you can't do it. I hunt off the ground in a ground blind. I've got a couple of blinds out in the pasture that's off the ground a little bit and has a ramp going up to them, or I just throw a pop-up blind down. And a lot of times I'll just, like, park 100, 200 yards from my stand or my blind and roll to it. Or sometimes if it's, like, wet or something, I have some friends that hunt with me, and they'll drop me off at the blind, and I'll just get out and go in there. And I have to use a crossbow nowadays because as much as I love compound and I would love to do it, my chair makes too much noise and kind of hard to pull back on a big buck when they're that smart. And so I use a crossbow, just makes it easier, and being paralyzed from the chest down. I don't have no core muscles, so I can't hold myself up. And crossbow is just a lot easier to use. I have one of my proudest deer that I've shot was a 18 scoreable points, and I shot him back in a 2018 during muzzleloader season. We'd actually, me and my brother-in-law had hunted this deer for like the previous 2 years. We've been just watching him and one of us trying to get him. And, it was muzzleloader season, and I went out there. I just had a corn feeder out there, and, he had disappeared off camera for a little while. I hadn't seen him in probably since early archery season in 2018 is last time I seen him. And I went hunting that morning, and I took it's like the first time I've ever taken this black powder out, and I've never really got into black powder hunting. And this buck came walking straight out to me, and I knew exactly who it was. I mean, you know, you have them deer that you just know who they are when they come out. Mm-hmm. And he was that one, and I shot him with a muzzleloader. I actually had him mounted and put on the wall and stuff, but that was the most probably memorable hunt I've got, just because of all the history with the deer, so many encounters, so many pictures, so much time just chasing him, and it finally came to an end. It is my biggest buck to date, so that one stands out to me the most. But yeah, my daughter, she is really big into hunting too. She's gotten three under her belt nowadays, so she is ate up with it like me. So nowadays my enjoyment comes from watching her get to harvest an animal as well. Probably more so than me killing one now, but I enjoyed taking her out there and seeing the excitement in her face.
So here's one question I'm thinking about. So you talked about hunting with a compound before. Now you switched to a crossbow. You're hunting out of ground blinds. You're not hunting out of tree stands. So you've got a little bit of a different experience of how you hunt afterwards compared to before. But do you feel in any way, shape, or form that it has tainted your hunting experience with the way you're hunting?
Used to, I would think hunting in a, before the accident, hunting in a ground blind, I would do it, but I liked being in a deer stand because I felt like you could see more, better surrounding, you had a better view of everything, I felt like. But, after hunting this long, almost 12 years in a ground blind, and I've killed my biggest buck out of a ground blind, I've killed pretty much about all my bucks that I've gotten to date, which is I think 10 or 11 of them. All but two of them came after my accident. So I can't really say there's an advantage or disadvantage to either one of them. I've had more success in the ground blind, but I've been hunting a lot like this now. So, I don't know if either one is right or wrong, but I personally like hunting on the ground. It feels a little safer.
Well, I don't think it's either right or wrong, but the angle I come from with that question is when you get into the world where we start to fight within ourselves as hunters and, you know, and sportsmen, where we have these ways that we think are the right way and the wrong way, or purest mindsets, and that's where you get into those debates of crossbows, compounds, you know, rifle, muzzleloader, all that stuff that we tend to bicker over, whether it's playful or whether it's not. And what I was coming from is, you know, you've had to, you've had to hunt with changes, but it sounds to me like your level of enjoyment in what you do has not skipped a beat, regardless of where your stand is, what kind of stand it is, what kind of weapon it is. You're still out enjoying creation and hunting.
It's the same pleasure. I do miss shooting a compound sometimes, but you get the same kind of excitement from a crossbow. If you have to do something different to be able to do what you love, it's always worth doing it. Even if it's a big change, it doesn't change the success of the animal that you harvest, in my eyes. So I think you just have to work with what you have, and I don't think crossbows cheating any more than shooting a compound. I think it's all equal. It all takes practice, and it all has to do with a little bit of luck and a lot of faith. So
absolutely. Well, Dakota, this was a fantastic. I thank you for sharing, because this was, number one, this was a powerful story. Number one, this is a tough story. This is about tough things that happen in life. And I thank you for your willingness to open up in vulnerability and share difficult things in your life to hopefully shed light in somebody else's.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me and letting me share the story. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Keep grinding, keep hunting hard, and good luck this season.
Yes, sir. You too. I appreciate it.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.